And I tell people, you know what? Each one of us have a story to tell. You know, everybody has different stories, different backgrounds. And I'm just encouraging people all the time to start writing. Write these things down, because you know what? This is the way history is made. This history is just simply stories that have been passed down. And if I had not written this little story about my background, a lot of those would never be known.
Welcome to the My Future Business Show, where we get you in front of your best audience and keep you there. Not only are we interviewing the biggest names in business to help you become even more successful, we're inviting you to book your spot on the show to help you grow your business. So at the end of the call, make sure you fill in the interview application form at myfuturebusiness.com/interviews. Hi, and welcome back to the My Future Business Show. My name's Rick Nusky. It's early morning here. It's in the afternoon where my next guest is. And with that in mind, I'm on the line with Clyde McCulley. How are you, Clyde?
I'm great. Thank you.
Thank you very much for spending some time with me. I know that you are a retired college professor of art, and you live in Portland, yeah. Maine. Are you still there in Portland?
Yes, we are. We moved here about 10 or 12 years ago after I retired. So,
fantastic. Is it what's the weather looking like over there at the moment?
Well, actually, we've had it. It's still pretty cold up here. We're still getting quite a bit of rain. We should be having better weather than we are right now. It's everything's running a little bit late up here in the east, and so some of Maine got actually a little snow up in the mountains yesterday. So,
oh, wow.
Anyway, we should be way beyond that. The trees should all be green. The grass should be green. Mm. But we're still waiting for that to happen.
So, Clyde, I'd love to explore a little bit about what you do before we jump into your experience as an author. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. I was raised, I was born in 1941. I'm as old as dirt. But I was born in Benton, Arkansas, which is down in the south. It's a little bit over to a little bit more toward the southwest, just above Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, I was raised, born to a poor family. There were six of us kids. Now, five of them had been born way before me, and I was the sixth one, came along 8 years after the rest of them, so obviously I was well planned. But anyway, my two older brothers, they joined the service, went off to World War II, and so I was raised there with my parents and two of my sisters that were a little bit nearer age to me. But anyway, we were quite poor. Now, we were not poor like homeless people, or I don't know if you have homeless people down
yes.
in Australia.
Yes.
But we have a number of them here, and I feel terribly sorry for them as I see them each day walking the streets mm-hmm. in Portland. But we weren't poor like that. We were poor out in the country. We didn't have running water. We didn't have electricity, at least until I was 6 or 7 years old. They finally got electricity to our place. But we were just raised out in the country, and I had a nephew that was only 3 years younger than me. And so he and I grew up like brothers, and we, you know, we roamed the woods. We did everything. We had lots of fun. I remember one day saying to my father, we were walking down the road, and I said, you know, Dad, I said, we're poor, aren't we? And he just stopped and he looked at me. He said, no, son, we're not poor. We're just a little bit short on money. And it was his attitude about things. And he said, you know, the neighbors down the over the hill, he said, they're poor. Their kids have to eat mustard and sugar sandwiches for lunch. And he said, you have bologna. I don't know if you know what bologna is or not, mm-hmm. but it's considered one of the cheaper foods of some meats of some sort. And so I was, it's interesting. I was telling this story at one of my book signings a while back. I was up in Canada at a little fishing village named Grand Manan Island. And there was a lobsterman there, and he came up to me afterwards, and he said, you know, I'm about the same age you are. And he said, I was raised poor on this island too. And he said, my dad was a lobster fisherman. Now, he said, in those days, lobster wasn't considered a delicacy. Yeah. He said it was poor man's food. It was what they, you know, they fed the prisoners and so forth. So he said, because my dad was a lobsterman, we had to take a lobster sandwich to school every day. And he said, I was so embarrassed to do that. And he said, what I wouldn't have given to trade my lobster sandwich for your bologna sandwich.
I can imagine.
I just thought, gosh, you know, everything's kind of relevant to something else. It's, yes. And that's the way he saw it. So it was fun. I had a lot of fun with those people up there. A lot of them were raised very poor like I was, about the same period of time. And so anyway, That's a little bit of the background. So, well, I must tell you, though, that I wanted to, my mother said, you know, Clyde, you should go to college. Now, of the six kids, three older, never finished high school. And the three younger ones, we did. And then I was the only one that ever set my foot inside a college to go to school. Mm-hmm. But my mother, she said, you know, I know you want to be an artist. I had actually got this interest in art by going up into my Aunt Ola's attic. And she had some oil paintings up there. And I got very excited about this. This is when I was probably 7, 8, 9 years old. And so I was telling my mother, and we were quite poor. And she finally saved up enough money to buy me a little wooden easel. And I had a brother-in-law that is, he painted eyes, glass eyes for soldiers. He was in the, he was called into the service too. Mm-hmm. And he was conscientious objector. So he had to paint these glass eyes. And so he said, I can get you some, you know, old tubes of oil paints from the government. We just throw them out. So he got that. My dad has old canvas window shades up in the attic, and we got those and stretched over a frame we made. And I started painting. So just as a young child, I wanted to be an artist. I knew that. So anyway, as I grew up, I got married when I was quite young, actually. And then so I didn't go right to high school. To college right away. I graduated high school. And my wife at that time, she and I went over into the Appalachian Mountains over in eastern Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And we went up to a little self-supporting school up there. And we worked up there with them. And that's where I learned to do a lot of all kinds of things. I learned to do electrical work. I started doing plumbing. I started doing everything because the school worked. Everything was done by the students and by the faculty and so forth. So anyway, I got a lot of good education there. So then I started school to college when I was 23 years old, I believe. And so anyway, I was determined to go ahead. I got my master's degree. I got my bachelor's, then I got my master's. And then I later on started teaching college. And then later on, I did my doctoral work, my doctorate. Mm-hmm. And my mother only had a 7th or 8th grade education, I guess. She was a good old country girl. And she came to my graduation. It was the only one she came to was my doctorate. And after I graduated, she, I had all my cap and gown on and everything. She came up to me and said, now, Clyde, can you write me prescriptions now that you have this doctor's degree? And I just kind of looked at her and I said, Mama, I said, no, I can't. She said, now, why would you go to school for all these years to be a doctor and can't write a prescription for me for my drug? I said, Mama, I don't think I can explain that to you.
It's the wrong type of doctor.
Yeah. So I was a doctor. As far as she is concerned, I was a doctor, nothing, because I couldn't, get her prescription for her. She was proud of me. Don't misunderstand.
I just love to. This is the essence of why I love to talk with people about their lives, their stories, because, it can fascinate me. It can amuse me. It can entertain us. It can educate us, all of these things. And I'd love to now talk about how it was that you started to, or decided to, I guess, add to your desire to be a painter to start writing books. How did that all come about?
Well, I retired in 2002.
Yep.
And my wife and I actually went up into Canada and ran some weekly cottage rentals there right on the ocean for about 10 years. We just sold that a couple of years ago. But anyway, my kids had always said to me, Dad, I would tell them stories when I have two daughters. Mm-hmm. And my kids always say, Dad, you tell us stories. So I'd tell them all these stories about when I was a kid. And they, as they got older, they're both married now and have their own kids. And they said, Dad, you should write this stuff down because we'd like to have it somewhere where we could keep it. So I thought, well, maybe I should. My wife had started taking some writing classes herself. And I thought, well, this is interesting. So I had started finding out about self-publishing. I didn't, I was new to all of this. And so I knew that's almost, it's pretty hard to get a big publisher to take you on when you're brand new. There's as many wannabe writers out there as there are wannabe artists, you know. And so, so anyway, I just sat down one day and thought, well, I'm going to start writing. And I just started writing these little stories about my childhood. And it was called The Boy on Shady Grove Road. And it's about my childhood in the 1940s and 50s and growing up there in Arkansas. So I had a little bit of success with it and sold, you know, sold some of them and so forth over Amazon and bookstores. And so I kind of got in this, kind of liked it. I thought, this is filling a creative urge within me, very much as the way of painting. I was a painter at first, then I got into photography and so forth. But I was getting that same nice feeling about the creative feeling that I was getting from writing that I had gotten from painting and from photography. So I thought, this is really nice, really neat. So anyway, I wrote that little book. And then I got the idea, maybe I should try writing a few fictional books. And so what I did, I kind of took my childhood that I grew up with in Arkansas, you know, out in the sticks and wilds and all the crazy things we did out in the woods and so forth. And I'll kind of transfer those over to two kids being raised in the Appalachian Mountains in eastern Tennessee. And so I put them in the same time period, the 1950s, as I had been raised. And so I have them doing all kinds of crazy things. They live up on a ridge with about half a dozen families up there that have no running water and no electricity and so forth. And I had started making these stories up for them. And so what I thought I would do when I started writing these stories, I thought, you know, I want to make it probably for kind of middle graders. Mm-hmm. So I thought, what shall I do? So my wife suggested, you know, you ought to give some of your chapters that you're writing to some kids that are middle graders and have them read them. And then let's have them come in for a little critique with us. So that's what I did. I started giving them some chapters and they came in. And so, you know, they started to give me, you know, ideas. They said, you know, we think you ought to add a girl to the story. And I said, a girl, you know, I just had these two boys like myself and my nephew had been before when I was a kid. And so they said, you know, girls like to read about girls. And remember, girls also buy books. They said, a 9-year-old kid told me. So I thought, well, that's pretty clever. Yeah. But one of them said, you know, and the other thing is you want to make sure that you, you know, make them mysterious and you want to add a little danger to them and you want to, you know, do all these different things that kids would like. And so that's what I started doing. I took a lot of their advice. I wrote a girl into the story, which really adds a lot to, I mean, she's peppy. The boys don't like the idea. She moves in her mother and she was raised over the mountain and they move into the same community because her father died. But so the boys know she's their cousin. So they've got to deal with her, but they thought she's going to keep us. She's going to slow us down. She's going to be a sissy. She's not going to do anything that we can do. But when she got there, she surprised them. She could throw rocks as hard as they could. She could do everything. She'd climb trees. She could ever do anything. So they found her to be the perfect mate. And so they go discovering all kinds of things. And so there's two books. One is called The Panther Creek Mountain. This is a series of books now. Yeah. The very first one was called Panther Creek Mountain, The Big Adventure. And then the second book was called Panther Creek Mountain, The Haunted Pond. And these kids discover a haunted pond way up in the mountains. And they fish something very spooky and scary out of the pond up there. And so it's got a lot of mystery to it for the kids. And then the one that's I just sent in today, and it's just got noticed back before I got on the radio with you, that it's going to be published now. And that one's called the Panther Creek Mountain Twin Treehouse Mysteries. And the kids decide to build tree houses on opposite side of a big creek, and they build a rope walkway bridge cross, and they have all kinds of adventures. So anyway, I just got into this, and I'm having fun with it. It's keeping me, as they say, out of the bars and out of the pool halls.
Oh, yeah, I'm sitting here, and there's a couple of things I've taken away from what you've just shared. The haunted pond, that just conjures up some pretty scary visions. I love the titles of these books, and I did notice also that your pace and the excitement in your voice picked up straight away when you started talking about the content. Is this something that people must have to become an author, do you think, that that passion?
Well, I think so in a way. I don't know. I mean, when I, as you say, I realized I was getting a little excited myself there telling you about those books. But I do think that people have to write about something that they don't want to write about. Now, you know, I try to encourage people to write. For instance, when I wrote my first book, The Boy on Shady Grove Road, mm-hmm. that was a little memoir of me. And I tell people, you know what? Each one of us have a story to tell. You know, everybody has different stories, different backgrounds. And so I try to encourage people to just take a few minutes. In fact, I've even put out a couple of little books, my wife and I, about to help people get started in their writing. We have that on our website. And I'm just encouraging people all the time to start writing. Write these things down, because you know what? This is the way history is made. This, you know, this history is just simply stories that have been passed down. And if I had not written this little story about my background, a lot of those would never be known, you know. Mm-hmm. And not that they're fantastic. I wasn't, you know, running for president or anything like that.
But your stories, aren't they?
They're my stories. And everybody has their stories. That's the interesting part, Rick. Absolutely. Everybody has their story.
And I'd love to just ask you, what age brackets did you write up to? Did you, and I guess that's the first part of the question we should explore. Is it up to your...
I'd say up to grade 8, probably.
Grade 8, right.
Yeah, but they can actually, kids here, I have kids that are in first grade that are buying my books, and these kids, when I see them, they give me back reports about, you know, how they love the Haunted Pond, and they love when they found the Indian mound in the woods and all that kind of stuff. So I have first graders reading, I have eighth graders reading, but you know what? I also have a lot of adults reading it, because the adults, it takes them back to their own childhood in so many ways. And what I'm finding too, a lot of my audience is also grandparents, because grandparents right now are looking for books that have some kind of salvation to them, as far as still giving kids a good feeling about themselves, mm-hmm. showing kids that they can help others and still have fun. And, you know, my books are not about Star Wars and all that kind of thing. We didn't have any of those kind of, you know, we didn't even have a TV when I was a kid. but and this is what so many kids are missing today, Rick.
Oh, absolutely.
They don't have their imaginations, they're texting on these phones, which drive me nuts. See, I'm an old tutor, as I told you, but you know, I feel so sorry sometimes, because I know that kids are not enjoying and exploring the types of things we did when we were kids. Mm-hmm. We just took simple things. I just got to tell you this. One time we were trying to say, we had an old Victrola record player. I don't know if you know what those are or not. But you wound it up, you had a handle on it, you had to wind it up, and a spring was in it, and then it would play these old 78 records, mm-hmm. RPM records. Well, we messed up, and we broke a spring. So we're trying to say, now, how can we play these records? We had this record. My dad said, well, you broke spring. It's just not going to do it. So one day I'm sitting there thinking, I thought, now, you know, the little needle sits down in this groove, and somehow or other it's picking up somehow those vibrations and putting them into this speaker thing, and we're hearing them. Yep. So I told Kenny, I said, you know, I got an idea. Let's go get a broom straw, the old broom straw, not these new modern type brooms, but the old straw broom straws. And I said, let's put a broom straw in our teeth and put it down in the groove of the record and see if we can hear it. Well, we couldn't hear it very well. Then I put my fingers in my ears, and man, I could hear this. Kenny would turn the record with his finger round and round, and I would put my fingers in my ears, you know, and listen, and we found that we could play the record player.
Innovation.
And no electricity and no spring.
Oh, wonderful. Look, you know, one of the things I'm taking from you is just this getting back to our grassroots as children and going out and playing with the mud and, you know, looking at ants close up and, you know, yes. putting that technology to the side. It's something that I'm so passionate about. And through story and, you know, reading to our own children who are still quite young, I can take them to a place and they sit there with a level of fascination. When you read your books to children, I'd love to, you know, for you to share with us, what are some of the reactions that you get from these kids?
You know, what's great is they'll sit there and their eyes get big, you know, mm-hmm. and their mouths sometimes come open, and you can just, you know, you can just tell by their body language what they're doing. But, you know, they like the idea of mystery. They like the idea of something a little spooky. And I don't get into gross things of body parts and all those kind of things laying around. You know, it's none of that kind of stuff. It's good, honest, clean. And in fact, let me tell you, one audience I'm finding that homeschool kids. I don't know if you have those or not, but we have some of the people where they'll have homeschools set up. And these are people that have homeschools are finding these books fascinating because there's a good quality of stuff. We try to give all a little, you know, a little, they're not goody two-shoe science stories. Yeah. These kids are having adventures, but they still respect their parents. They still thank their mother for fixing their lunch, you know, their dinner for them. They still help her wash the dishes in the kitchen and so on. And they do their chores and they just show respect. This last one I've written about twin treehouse, the mystery twin treehouse. They find that someone's leaving little gifts for them up in their treehouse at night. And it's like penny candy and so forth. And this is kind of spooking them because they don't know, is somebody trying to trick us? Is somebody going to harm us?
It's funny because, again, we sit there with our children and we physically grab a book. We don't have a tablet or some sort of technology in front of us. We physically grab a book. They bring books home from school. And, you know, as you mentioned earlier, I also, as an adult, lose myself in these books.
Yeah. Well, good children, let me tell you, children's books are not that easy to write. I mean, they say that sometimes children's books are some of the harder ones to write because you have fewer words sometimes, mm-hmm. and you've got to, you know, you've got to make this connection with the kids and with their imaginations and so forth.
And try to keep them with them.
And quickly. And you can lose them quickly too.
You know, you've shared some wonderful insights into these books and, you know, I'd love to talk a little bit about your own podcast. Let's talk about that.
Okay. I just exploring and I've started a little podcast that I go into things that are nostalgic with people from the olden days and so forth. And so I generally have older audiences that like to listen to these, but sometimes some of the younger people like them too and mm-hmm. kind of find them fascinating. But we go into, you know, I talk about sometimes I may have one just on talking about childhood smells that we remember when we were kids, you know.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how many different ideas you get from people as to smells, you know, yep. or things they played with when they were kids or things they did and so forth. Let me tell you, for instance, I talked about my father. I shouldn't mention this to you. My father was 60 years old when I was born. And my mother was 40. So, you know, my dad was born 15 years after Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. So he was born still in the 1800s. And so he saw the first automobile come in. He saw the first car. He saw, you know, all these things that with the turn of the century was just totally new and totally made things different. Mm-hmm. So I talk about that sometimes. I just go into all kinds of things, but people can, you know, go to my website and they can pick up and iTunes have my, you know, my podcast. They can go to a number of different ones, Stitcher. I'm not sure who all, there's about 12 or 15 different stations.
Yeah. There's different distribution channels, isn't there?
Yeah. Distribution. Yeah. And so I do that just for kind of fun. And, here again, I'm just kind of enjoying sharing these things that, I look back on now and wish I had jotted down more notes when I was younger, you know?
Yeah, well, we can always look back and, you know, always think about what we could have done differently, what we could have added. But, you know, you've brought some wonderful memories flooding back for me. And now I'm starting to think about the scents and the smells and the things I've experienced as a child myself. It's just been wonderful. I'd love to ask you, Clyde, how many books are there in the series and what do you have coming up next?
Okay, right now I have 1, 2, 3. The fourth book is just going to be coming out. This coming this next week mm-hmm. should be printed. so I have four of those, and then I have a couple of other books. I probably will do a couple or three more in this series. Mm-hmm. What I'm trying to do is make them where they can come out as ebooks as well. I don't really like ebooks for kids myself, but I still find a lot of kids are reading the electronic books.
Yes.
And so I do illustrations. And that's another thing kids, when I ask these kids about how I should write the book, they said, put illustrations in it. So I do really quick little sketch, ink sketches and so forth and put in, but I don't give too much detail because here again, I find that kids like to each one look at it and imagine it themselves, you know, as they, so anyway, I have a, probably a couple more of those coming out. I'm still playing with other ideas of novels and so forth, but you know, I don't want to fool myself. I'm not a great writer, but I'm having fun telling stories. I'm a storyteller, really, in between pages. Yeah.
So, and you know, and given the interest in these books, where can people find them if they want to access them?
Okay. Amazon carries all of my books. I mean, Amazon, what do they not carry, right?
Yep.
But they can also get it at Barnes & Noble, which are the bookstores here in the States. Where else can they get them? There's a number of e-books that they can order. Kobo, man, and I can't remember who all is carrying them right now. But if they would go, if they would want to go to my website, you can get see all of my stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
It's Clyde McCulley. Well, if they put the www there, it works. But www.clydemcculley.com. It's just my name, CLYDEMCCULLEY.com. No spaces, just clydemcculley.com. And my website will come up, and it will, you can see the podcast on there. And also, if you don't mind, I would like to offer your listeners a chance to get a free book.
Absolutely.
Signed copy.
Yep.
And now, if they will go to my website, clydemcculley.com, at the back there is a contact page, and all they need to do is put their email address and simple information there, and just put in there, you know, that they want to try to win the book or something, just so that I will know. And if they email that to me, then I'm going to, you know, probably about 3 weeks, I will, pull out of the hat someone, and
yep,
they'll get the Panther Creek Mountain, The Big Adventure. That's the first one of the series. And it's really the one that'll be best to, you know, get them started and so forth. Yeah. But these books are great for, you know, holidays, for Christmas, for everything.
Yes.
And it's to try to, what I try to do in here is I put a little historical stuff in the stories too, so that kids can see how kids used to live and how they, things they played with and everything like that.
Yeah, but that's just such a wonderful treat. And as is normally the case, I will make the links available on Clyde's post on the My Future Business website. Clyde, it's been an absolute treat spending some time with you on the My Future Business show today.
Oh, Rick, it's really been fun talking with you. And you're really easy to talk to. I'll recommend other people to contact you too. And I hope you have lots of listeners, and I hope they'll look up my little books for me and do it. Oh, and you know what else? If people will, and remember this about anybody's books you read, if you'll just write a little review for them at the end, you know, you put that on Amazon, you put it on Goodreads, you put it on all kinds of things. But if you just take a few minutes and say, you know, I really like this book and here's the reason, or you know what, I didn't find this book that great. You can also write bad reviews, but you know, I find that it really helps when people write reviews for your books. And so all authors would appreciate people writing reviews. It helps us a lot.
Thanks for joining us today. If you enjoyed the call, then make sure to subscribe, leave a comment, share us with your friends, and book your spot on the show at myfuturebusiness.com/interviews. And if you're looking for solutions that will help grow your business, then visit myfuturebusiness.com/shop.